Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello there, my friends, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. We are so glad to have you back. Listen, I have got a great show lined up for you today. I have a guest that we are going to talk about parental rights in the healthcare setting. What are your rights when you take your child to access primary care or other forms of healthcare? You are not going to want to miss it. Now, I've been sharing with you that it is Nurse Practitioner Week, and as a nurse practitioner, I've been really excited to feature some nurse practitioner guests who share their expertise with you and our mindset as holistic care providers, people who care about your physical health, but also your social, emotional, mental, and spiritual health, because those things are all so important. So today's guest is a pediatric nurse practitioner. Her name is Amber Brown. She is the mom of two. She's an entrepreneur. She is a nursing school educator. And Amber also graduated from the same nursing school that I did with her bachelor's degree in 2006, and she became a pediatric nurse practitioner in 2010. She taught there, and then she was a child abuse nurse practitioner at an advocacy center. And currently, she works in urgent care in Houston, and she runs a tutoring business called Ivy League Tutoring. Now, here is the best part of her biography by far. I am so excited to tell you that Amber is, I feel like we need a drum roll here. Oh, we got it. Okay, good. My sister. I know, isn't that fun? I have a sister who is also a pediatric nurse practitioner. And Amber, welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here today.
I am excited to be here with you too. It is just so fun to have this sister moment. Now, Amber and I, we're both moms. We are both pediatric nurses who became pediatric nurse practitioners. We both work in primary care. We are both Christians with very deeply held faith, and we both grew up in a home that looked perfect on the outside, but was impacted by emotional neglect and relational dysfunction that stemmed from generational trauma. And I've been pretty open in sharing my journey about that, but we coped in different ways, which I think is important for parents to realize, either for your own journey or for the journey of your kids, to realize that everybody copes in different ways. And I've talked about this before too. Some ways of coping are more socially acceptable and even celebrated at times, while others are not. But we really have to meet people where they are. And so, Amber, I'd love for you to share your story.
Okay. So as I'm sure most of you know, we grew up in a Christian home. If the church doors were open, we were there. We did Sunday school.
Before they were there, probably. Oh, yeah.
We were waiting outside for them to unlock it, of course. We did GAs and Sunday school and choir. We were there for everything. And we had a family that looked very good on the outside. And we had different roles in that family. And my role was the performer. And my job was to be very cute and very funny and to put on a show. So I was on a stage from 5 years of age, I think, was the first time that I actually went and had a big performance. And I knew that that was my role in the family. And as long as I maintained that, then I was loved and cared for. And we maintained, you know, what looked great on the outside. But that facade can't hold up forever, because that's a lot of pressure on a person. And when things started getting more difficult for me in my adult years, that facade came down. So I had a very, very rough time starting in around 2010. I was sexually assaulted, and I ended up in the hospital for 3 days. I had severe PTSD afterwards, and I went into therapy for about a year in order to try to heal from that event. I didn't tell anyone except for my sister sitting across from me here, and I told my best friend. And very shortly after I had graduated from therapy and tried to bear all of that by myself, that best friend passed away very, very suddenly in January of that year. 7 days later, I got a call that another friend that I was very close to passed away as well. And 6 months later, his daughter passed away too. It was a really, really hard time for me. And there was three tragic deaths in such a short period of time, and I didn't have any coping mechanisms to deal with that, to be quite honest. I went and saw a therapist again, and it wasn't enough this time. And so I went and saw a psychiatrist who started me on some anti-anxiety meds and some antidepressant meds to see if that could help me, because I was broken. I was hurt and sad, and my marriage was struggling. I started drinking a lot to cope with that pain, and I was still seeing patients at that time, very much in all of the different hospitals, and somehow I got a multi-drug resistant lung infection and ended up in the hospital for most of that summer. My sister came and saw me, and I was not at a place where I could accept her love. I was embarrassed of myself. I was embarrassed of being on medications. I was embarrassed of the choices I had made, and the one person that I had confided in, I had to push away at that time. And my marriage did start falling apart after that. I just was not in a healing place, and I could not figure out how to get myself out of the depression that I was in. I lost my job during that time. We lost our contract, and I got divorced. So I had a son at the time, a beautiful, wonderful, perfect son, and I was struggling in silence because I was the performer of the family. I was not allowed to show people that I was not perfect. So really nobody knew that any of this was happening except for the hospitalization part, because I needed some help with my son. But there were days that I couldn't get out of bed. There were days that I couldn't take care of my son. And there were days that I had to call people over to say, hey, can you take Caden for the day? Because I'm in a deep, dark place. But I still wasn't allowed to tell anyone because I had to be perfect. And I had to still maintain that performer status that was ingrained in me. I had to move out of our home. So me and my son, Caden, moved into an apartment. And then I found out that I was pregnant. So here I was, a single mother, pregnant, lost my home, lost my job. I was on medications that I didn't really want to be on. I was using coping mechanisms that were not healthy for me. And I, at that time, hit the most rock bottom place you could imagine. But I think sometimes God really has to allow things to happen to you so that you just fall flat down. And all you can do is look up at that time and look at the sun, because God doesn't do things to you. I know sometimes when bad things happen, we think, oh, God did this to me. He will not do harm to you. But sometimes he will allow the situation around you to change so dramatically so that you're allowed the time, the space to look up to him. And that's what happened. And I started my healing journey then, but I was homeschooling my son, who had some very special schooling issues that public school wasn't a good place for him. I was trying to start a business in a market that did not exist. I was pregnant. It was a very difficult time for me, very busy time. And then Emmy was born, and it was perfect. And I thought life was going to be okay. I'm going to get healthy, get well. I've got this perfect baby. And that thought lasted for about 20 minutes. And the doctor came back in and told me that she was really sick and that she would be having her first surgery the next day. And that was the first of five surgeries she had in her first year. I was absolutely blown away. I had no idea that anything was wrong with her. I had had perfect prenatal care. My delivery went beautifully. She looked gorgeous, but she had some major gut issues. And so she got an ostomy the first day she was born. Because I was a nurse practitioner, they allowed me to come back into the NICU, and I got to watch her get sedated and stay with her until right before they started the surgery, which was really kind. But we ended up in the NICU for an entire month. The hospital was wonderful and letting us, they let me stay there at the hospital for the first 2 weeks. And then I had to go home, and I had to leave my baby there. And Caden needed me. He had missed his mama, and he thought that I was going to be bringing a baby home, you know. So I took him out on a date, and then I would wake up every morning. I'd pump all night long and then wake up in the morning and go see my daughter. And we ended up in the hospital for way longer than I'd anticipated, but she finally got to graduate. And I thought, again, things are going to be better. And then we went and saw genetics, and we went and saw neurosurgery, who told me that she had spina bifida. I was not prepared for that, and that she would need a massive spinal surgery right at Christmas. So I did get to bring her home, and that was a glorious day. But shortly after, I knew we had surgery after surgery. So she had four surgeries that year. We came home 2 days before Christmas and did get to spend Christmas at home with her family. And then she had her last surgery just after she turned a year. Going through that by myself, trying to maintain the facade, I knew I couldn't. And Emmy's journey broke me down, not in a bad way, but in a way that I wanted to share my struggles for the first time. And so her journey through the NICU and through her surgeries and through her first year was very public. We had a large internet following, and people were looking at her story, and thousands of people were praying for her all over the world. And I know that that's how she got through that, and that's how I got through that. When I decided to really get well was when I looked at my life, and I had these two beautiful children, and I was building this business that I believed in, and I knew I had to destroy the beliefs that I was raised with in my childhood in order to make new ones. I desperately wanted to break the generational trauma and make things better for my kids. I didn't want them to experience having to maintain a facade of perfection, because as Jessica mentioned, that can look very different between children, but it's still destructive nonetheless. And I knew that if I did not break that generational trauma and make things better for my kids, then I was just perpetuating more trauma through the generations, and I wanted it to stop with me. So I started reading, and I listened to every podcast I could, and I started meditating, praying, really getting into my Bible and saying, God, I cannot do this on my own. And I don't care that people know I'm not perfect, because I am not, and I need help, because I had done all of this on my own. Our family was broken apart at that time. And I know my siblings loved me and wanted to be there for me, but there were things that were in the way. And I desperately just wanted to tell someone. And when I allowed myself the grace to do that, they came flooding in like an army. Like they had just been waiting for me to ask. And I felt really supported for the first time in a really, really long time. I dedicated everything to my healing journey because I didn't feel that I could adequately care for, love, raise, break the bonds of trauma for my children if I was not healed myself. I went to the gym, which I know sounds ridiculous, and I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it, but that's part of your healing journey. Your physical body, your emotional body, your spiritual body, they're all a part of you. And my kids came to the gym with me, and they would cheer me on and they would say, Mom, keep going. We'll go out for tacos afterwards. And I was like, yes. And that spurred me on. And my kids got to see me heal, not just physically. And it wasn't about looking good or losing weight, though those things happen naturally when you take care of your body. But them seeing me putting my spiritual needs, emotional needs, physical needs, and getting better, they saw that that is love. You know, and they were there to support me so that I could be there to support them. And my business started booming, and Emmy started getting sewed back together, and she healed. And she is 7, by the way, and a competitive gymnast. It is amazing. unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. But God showed so much grace and mercy to me.
Oh, Amber, that is, you just ended with my two favorite words together in the history of ever, but God. And this is one of the biggest but God stories in my whole life. So don't go away. When we come back, we'll talk about what it's like to care for children with special health needs and what it's like to navigate the healthcare system. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, friends. I'm so happy to have you here back on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. If you were listening before the break, we were talking to a very special nurse practitioner named Amber, who also happens to be my sister. Now, if you listen to her amazing testimony, I would be very surprised if you have dry eyes. I was getting teary because it is such a miraculous work of God to have healing. And I want everyone out there listening to know that there is hope for healthy relationships. It's hard, it's messy, it's not a linear journey, it's not something that happens overnight. It is a looping back and forth, valleys and mountaintops kind of journey. But sitting across the table here from my sister, I can tell you it is worth every struggle. And as we were talking about, you know, we grew up in the same home, both coped in different ways, both that were equally unhealthy, but just in different ways. And I have shared this before, but, you know, my revelation came the day that my husband took a photo of me crying on a recliner on the phone, just really trying to navigate conflict over broken relationships. And I was so angry with him for taking a picture of me in that moment. I just felt so vulnerable. But he turned the camera around. It was a digital camera before smartphones. And he showed me. This was what my children were seeing every day, was me sit on that same recliner with the remote phone in my hand, crying over a life I would never have, while the life I did have was passing me by and I was missing it. And so I wrote this in my book. Something shifted in me and I vowed to be present. That day I came to the crushing revelation that perfection is not attainable, real love is not earned, and it was no longer my job in life to protect others from the consequences of their own destructive actions. Now, folks, that can seem really, really hard, but that's where you have to be when you think, okay, I want to heal this. And I think so many of us, we carry around burdens that we have and we minimize them and we say, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Or you know someone who had it worse and you just kind of soldier on. But if you don't deal with it, your children will. Your children will carry that burden for you. So, Amber, you've shared a little bit about your healing journey, but what things did that look like? What was that like for you spiritually? What have you learned about God?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think the biggest thing that I would want people to know is that you don't have to do it alone and you don't have to do it by yourself. I was so nervous to come on today because there's still a little girl inside of me that is scared to admit that I was not perfect, that things didn't look great for me, that the person that I was on Facebook wasn't exactly how it panned out in my life. So the first thing I would encourage people to do is to not be afraid to be authentic and be who they are and seek help from people. Because if you look back, I told Jessica that I wrote everything that happened in a timeline. Because what I noticed is as I looked at things, I noticed I didn't deal with the trauma. I didn't deal with the hurt. And then something else happened and it built up. And then something else happened and it built up. And our bodies do keep the score. And you can only hold on for so long as weight after weight after weight is put on your shoulder. Anybody would crumble under that type of pressure. So as things come in now, I still have things that I need to work through and I still have traumas that come through and I still have little snippets of things and little voices in my head telling me I'm not good enough or don't share on today's show. That's embarrassing. You know, there's still that part of me that doesn't want to be vulnerable, but there are millions of stories like mine where people have been through soul crushing things. And I want you to know that there are other people who are like-minded, who want to help you, who desperately want to love you, but you have to allow them the space to do that and give them permission to love you and so that you have that to accept. And then you can get some help on the journey. I just threw everything on the wall and saw what would stick. Honestly, on my healing journey, I was reading books that people had recommended, and I started listening to podcasts, and I was praying. And there were times where I was on my face before God saying, I cannot do this alone anymore. And there is a beauty in being on your face. There is. It is a very just vulnerable place to be. Like, God, I am kneeling before you and I am begging you to help me. And the thing is, you don't have to beg. All you have to do is ask. But there still is a beauty in just being in that vulnerable place and saying, God, whatever you want to do with my story, I am open to that now. Before, I was cloaked in such shame and secrecy that whatever happened, I just put underneath the cloak with me. I put underneath. And it got very busy under there and it got full. But when I was able to shed that coat of shame and secrecy and realize that there are other people that need to hear a story like mine, to say that things were not perfect and I'm embarrassed of some of the choices that I made, but that not everyone's journey has to look like that. Or if it does, I'm here to tell you that there's a whole other side of this and it is beautiful. And that there are times you can lay in the ashes of what your former life looked like while God is just swirling it around and will make absolute beauty from those ashes. It takes time, and the healing journey was ugly. I had to look within and find some really ugly truths about myself that I didn't want to admit, and I journaled all of them, and they're all in a closet. I kept them all. I thought that, you know, there were some resources I found that said burn them once you write it down. I don't think so. I think that it's beautiful sometimes to go back and look at where I've come from. And look at where I am now. And that makes me so grateful that God saw something in me and gave me the grace and the mercy to pull me out to the other side. And I hope that if there are people listening now that are still in those ashes, that they can look up to the sun and know that that is possible to heal, to allow God the time, the energy, the beauty to make something from your story in your life, and to let people in your life in so that they can walk that journey with you.
You know what's amazing, Amber, as I'm listening to your story and seeing God make beauty from ashes, is that he gave you and your daughter a parallel healing story, because you were emotionally hurt and disabled and crippled in being able to emotionally walk and walk through your life, and God healed that. And then you have a daughter who had spina bifida, mm-hmm. and spinal surgery. And not only, you know, we didn't know she would walk, but not mm-hmm. only is she walking, as you said, she is a competitive gymnast.
Yeah.
So giving both you and your daughter different, but such the same miraculous stories, I can see your grit and your grace that you have in your daughter and the healing that you've had making her thrive. But I'm sure that that was a really difficult place to be as both a mother yes. and a care provider. Like you said, I mean, I think there's probably people who are listening who are thinking, I don't know if I would want to go back in the NICU and see part the beginning of the surgery, you know, but you were gifted in that way. And God knew that she needed you specifically as a mother. But what was that like as you started to navigate the healthcare system, not as a patient with people you weren't related to, but with your own daughter?
Sure. I found it to be one of the most frustrating experiences. I knew what our healthcare system
honest.
Was like.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, be honest.
Our healthcare system is broken. I think we all know that. But there was a time where Emmy had 11 specialists that we were seeing, and they don't talk to each other. Doctors don't, you know, unless you have a care coordinator, which I would highly recommend if you have a medically complex child. A care coordinator is somebody who can call all the different physicians that you see and make sure that each physician is on board and understands the plan of care from your specialist. Because adults have this issue too. When you go to a cardiologist, they address your heart. And then when you go to a nephrologist, they'll look at your kidneys, and they may not all be talking to each other. And so it was a very fragmented system. And I was frustrated as a nurse practitioner. I can't imagine how a mom would feel that didn't have healthcare experience. We were going to doctors all the time. There was tests and blood work done and CT scans and ultrasounds. And she would cry every time she knew she had to go into the tunnel. That's what she called it, the MRI or the CT. She would call the tunnel. And she hated it. And it's very difficult being in the patient perspective because she was too little to understand what was happening to her. But I would have to hold her down for blood draws, or I would have to, you know, be there when she got sedated or an IV started and she would scream and scream and scream, but she couldn't understand. You know, I was the one that was holding her down. You know, I was the one that was changing her ostomy bag every day. And that was one of the worst experiences ever. It was very, very hard. And I think a lot of me was so, I mean, I was so compassionate for her, of course, because she was my daughter. But I found a new compassion for patients that are going through this. I think we see them for 15, 20 minutes in an office visit. And sometimes we forget that they're going home and living this life. And that there needs to be a lot more compassion shown. And there needs to be a lot more coordination of care. So if you do have a medically complex child, it is really important that you find a care coordinator. Those are usually available through your insurance company. You can also find them sometimes in the organization at which you're being seen. You have to ask sometimes for them, but they will help to coordinate appointments, times. They will talk to your doctors and make sure your doctors are talking to each other. And that was really helpful for us.
What are ways that you would encourage other people who are looking at parents, especially single parents, because you experienced this as a single mom? Mm-hmm. What are ways that people in their community, in their church, their neighborhood, their family, how can they help support a parent who is going through a medical crisis like you did?
Feed them. I'll tell you, cooking was the last thing on my list. I had to change ostomies and we had all kinds of medical things we had to do. She had medications that we had to give. I had doctor's appointments to be at. And I had a lovely, beautiful, wonderful son that really needed my time and attention. Oh, let me make a note right here. When you have a medically complex child, the other siblings can feel neglected, and very rightfully so. And they may feel jealous, or they may feel resentment towards the sibling that's taking up all the time and the energy. And that is perfectly normal and understandable. So as a single mom, I was trying to manage Emmy's healthcare needs, but also remembering that I had a beautiful, wonderful 7.5-year-old little boy who needed a date with me and needed time with me. And there was only one of me. And that was hard. That was hard. So some things that the community could do would be, first of all, I needed somebody to come over and to learn what needed to be done to take care of Emmy. Babysitters, as you can imagine, are very hard to come by, because if you have a medically complex child, they may not and aren't trained in taking care of that child. So I just really needed one or two people to come over and learn that so that I could leave for periods of time and spend time with Caden, you know, and make sure that his development, his well-being was taken care of. Now, I was very lucky at the time because I did have a tutoring school for nursing students, and my nursing students were also my nanny. So I could teach them the skills that they needed, and then they would take care of Emmy. But the community could come together and just volunteer, you know, bring food. Any dinner would be greatly appreciated, because cooking and managing all of these things is very difficult. Or just being an ear to listen. Hey, I can't fix your child, and I know you're frustrated because you can't fix your child, but I'm here to just listen to your struggles. That's also super helpful.
I'm sure a lot of the things that you're talking about, you know, you are a pediatric nurse practitioner. This was your profession. You know this world. You live, breathe, eat, and sleep this world. This world gives you an income. But for parents who don't have those skill sets, some of the things that you're talking about, I mean, it's not only new to them in that context of their child, it's new to them completely. And I think there's a lot of parents, you know, what we're talking about a lot these days, and what I'm hearing from parents is just a fear of the healthcare system, a fear of, you know, are you going to do something that harms my child? How do I know that what you're doing is healthy? How do I, you know, navigate this and feel confident in the care that I'm getting? What advice would you have for those parents?
Ooh, it can be really difficult to hear that your kid is sick first and foremost. And sometimes that takes some time. You don't get a lot of time, but there is an emotional devastation. I remember, you know, you've had children, lots of them, and people say, you know, do you want a girl or do you want a boy? And most of the time, while people respond is, I don't care if I have a boy or girl, as long as they're healthy. And I probably used to be the person that said that as well, until I had a baby that was not healthy. And then when I heard that, it hurt, because I thought, my type of baby is the only type of baby people don't want.
Oh my goodness, Amber.
And she needed me, and I got to be there for that, and that was beautiful. But sometimes people have babies that are not healthy when they're born. So I'm not telling you not to say that. I'm just saying it might be something you think about, because sometimes babies are not born well. Mine wasn't. She got better. I forgot your original question. Can we go back?
What do you say to parents who are overwhelmed and scared to access the medical system?
Oh,
and,
sure.
And you put so much trust in there, and really you don't know, you know, if that's good or if that's not. And it can just be really scary to give that trust over. And where does that line lie between you're the parent, you're making the decisions, but you also don't know about these conditions and you're giving trust. So how do you cope with that?
So I had my medical knowledge in my mind, but when it's your child, it's completely
matter.
Different.
Totally
right?
True.
I know there are a lot of medical providers that are from the train of thought where parents shouldn't be researching. Parents shouldn't be on the internet. I don't believe that. I believe that parents are the expert in their own child, and that I can trust them to look up things and to research, and I can help guide them through that process.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I view that as family-centered care, that I may be the expert in some medical knowledge, but parents are the only ones who know their child. I'm only seeing them for a, you know, 10, 20, 30 minute sliver in time, but you see them all and all the time. And we work best when we are in partnership. We'll talk more about that partnership and what to look for in a pediatric care provider that you know and trust on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. If you've been listening, you've been hearing the remarkable story of a very special nurse practitioner during this Nurse Practitioner Week. We have been talking to none other than my sister, Amber Brown, and she has shared her just incredible God story, testimony of healing and hope and redemption. And I cannot tell you how excited I am to be just sitting across the table from her today and having this heart to heart and getting to where we are. And I said it before, I'll say it again. There is always hope for healthy relationships. It's not easy. You have to do the work. You have to be in an uncomfortable place. But if you keep doing the same thing that you've been doing, you're going to keep going the same place that you've been going. If you want to go somewhere different and start a different relationship, you can do that. And I hope that if you missed her testimony, you'll go back and listen to that. Before the break, we were talking about just the fear that parents have today about seeking healthcare. How do we know that the healthcare that we're getting is good? How do we know we can trust our healthcare provider? And I recently had an email from a listener about the case of Maya Kowalski. And I have watched the documentary Take Care of Maya and looked at this concept of medical kidnapping. Now, if you haven't seen the documentary, it's basically about a little girl who had a mother who was a nurse, and she was diagnosed with a chronic health condition. And they went to an emergency room in Florida. And long story short, you can watch the documentary if you want to, but the state ended up taking custody of Maya. And tragically, through all of that, her mother died by suicide. Now, just recently, there was a verdict for $226 million, I believe, in favor of Maya. And this is generating conversation. Now, I want to tell you, first of all, that I am a pediatric healthcare provider that provides care every day. And when you watch things like that, it can be very scary. And the attorney in that documentary says this happens all the time. Well, that's kind of like talking to a nurse in the ICU or talking to me, who is an expert in human trafficking. I can look at that, and that's what I work with every day. So of course it seems like it happens every time. all the time. But most of the time, you are going to have healthcare providers who are genuinely interested in your family's best interest, and they want to help empower you to live your healthiest lives. Now, as nurse practitioners especially, we believe in family-centered care. That's where we partner our expertise in healthcare issues with your expertise as a parent. Because I can tell you something that might work on paper, but you might know your child well enough to think that will never work in a million trillion years. And I believe you. So that is something that's really important. And I talk about this all the time, how it's so important to establish a relationship with a pediatric healthcare provider in primary care who you trust, and you know what? You should like them too. That is really important. And that way, when you have these complex decisions that you're making, you're not just relying on your own research. You have that expertise of someone you respect and trust to help guide, not dictate, but guide your decision-making. So Amber, I would love to hear your thoughts on that. You're also a pediatric healthcare provider. You're also a mom. How do we balance this and look for characteristics and that we like in a pediatric healthcare provider and know that we can trust what they're saying?
Sure. So I think sometimes you've really got to look through the lens of your mother's intuition, right? When I'm providing care, I trust that mother's intuition 100%. I will ask the parent, what do you think? The reason why I do that is because moms know their kids better than I will ever know their child. I could see their child very commonly and very often and have a good relationship with the family, but that mom's intuition is powerful. There's something powerful about that. So I would say if your doctor or your nurse practitioner is giving you advice or it is telling you what they think and it doesn't resonate with your mom's intuition, get a second opinion. I can give you an example on this. So Emmy has very severe food allergies. We've got the EpiPen and the Benadryl and all of that. So we've been seeing an allergist for quite some time. Because she had so many gut surgeries, it was really important to me to breastfeed her. And so she could not eat any solid food until she was 9 months old. And so that was just a really important part and a really big gift that I could give to her. When we went and saw the allergist told me that she was allergic to milk, gluten, eggs, pineapple. That's a crummy one. She has a myriad of food allergies. And then she told me that I should stop breastfeeding so that I wouldn't have to limit my diet because it's not fair for me to have to stop my diet so that, and I didn't feel so good about that. I wanted to give this gift to my child. I wanted to have that experience with her. And so I just went and got a second opinion. And I said, what else can we do to fix her food allergies, but to stay true to who I am as a mom? So there are times when you're seeing a provider, and if what they're saying isn't resonating with who you are, you can find a different provider, or you can get a second opinion and see if there's something else that you could possibly do.
And really, the way that we're trained for evidence-based practice is to use evidence that we have. We weigh through that. And of course, you know, we don't look at one singular point of evidence. We look for trends over time. We look for accumulating volumes of evidence to reinforce things that we're learning. But it also incorporates the clinician knowledge, so my experience in treating things and knowing my community and what's there, and patient preference. Those are the three, you know, the three points of the triangle on evidence-based practice. And so that's important to know, and they should all be weighed evenly. I mean, those things are all important, and patient preference shouldn't be lower or less important. We should find a way to work those things together. Now, I think, what are things that you would say to, how would you find a healthcare provider? Because I'm sure there's people listening who are thinking, yeah, we don't really have one that we see regularly, or we don't really like the one that we're seeing regularly for whatever reason that be. Maybe it's their hours don't match, you know, what we can do, or it just doesn't feel like you're jiving, because healthcare is such a personal thing. You know, yes. I mean, it really is. So what advice would you give to parents who are looking for a pediatric primary healthcare provider?
Sure. So the first thing I would encourage you to do is really solidify your own beliefs and what it is that you're looking for.
Are you looking for a holistic nurse practitioner? Are you looking for somebody more that just is giving medicines? Are you looking for somebody that's on the research side? What is it that you're looking for in that healthcare provider? Because that will help to guide you to who you need to see. Second big thing I would say is find your mom tribe. Who believes the same way that you do, right? And you don't have to have a huge group of friends to do that. There's some online communities that are available, but find people who believe the same way that you do or have the same. And when I say believe, I mean, healthcare beliefs, which is kind of funny. But there's a million different ways you can provide healthcare to a person. And there's a million different ways you can receive healthcare. So when you're looking for someone, ask around and get some references, get some resources. Who did you see? What did they say? Did you like the way that they treated you? Did you feel respected? Did you feel like a partner in that healthcare transaction, which sounds kind of silly, but when you're talking to a physician or to a nurse practitioner, you want somebody who's talking with you, not at you. And so those are things and questions you want to ask. Who did you see and how did they make you feel? Did you feel happy with the plan of care? And start asking around. I think that's really important to get somebody's personal perspective of being in a room with that provider.
And you also, you and I talked before, and you can look at their website to see, you know, sometimes they'll put out their care philosophy about certain issues. You can look at the organization that they're a part of, if they're a part of a larger health center, and what kind of policies are there. And I think a lot of parents may not be aware, you know, you might have done this when your baby was first born, but have that new parent appointment. So you can ask, do you have interview appointments? And a lot of times providers will set aside, you know, one or two slots in an afternoon per week that they'll just meet with new parents and answer any questions that you might have. And that might be a good time to do an interview. Now, Amber, one of the other most common questions that I get and is, you know, should if the provider is asking you to leave the room so they can talk to your teenager alone, what in the world are they talking about? Should they leave or should they not? And I'm sure out there listening, we already have parents. You are answering us right now. Like, we can't hear you on the radio, but you're saying absolutely not. Or you're saying, yes, I have no problem with it. And this is just representative of the diverse feelings on the spectrum. But I think probably that most parents just feel kind of uneasy in the middle. Like, should I? Should I not? What do you say to that?
Sure. So I have a 14-year-old now. Caden's 14. So if I'm put in that situation, I think honestly, I would ask Caden, do you want me to stay or do you want me to go? And you have to do that with the attitude of it's not going to hurt your feelings if he says, I want you to go, which it wouldn't, right? Maybe there's something he wants to ask about his body that he wouldn't want to talk to me about, you know? I mean, so I would ask him. I don't want to embarrass him in any type of way, but I want to give him the opportunity to talk to someone if it's not something he wants to ask me. I think that if you have trust in your healthcare provider, that that makes that decision a little bit easier for you because you're not, it's somebody who knows your child. You're not worried that they're going to do something behind your back. You know, there has to be a trusting relationship with you and the provider. And then I would refer to my child and say, what do you prefer in this moment in time?
I think that's a great way to approach it, to give them some autonomy in that. But I think it's important too to prepare them for that before you go and say, okay, let's talk about this before we go in. Do you want me to go back there with you? Would you like me to wait in the waiting room? And if you have a good relationship with your child and you have a good relationship with your healthcare provider, one of the things I think that is so important is to remember that kids can't grow up overnight in a sense. We are preparing them gradually for adulthood. So I'm just going to share with you transparently, as a healthcare provider, I get a lot of kids who are home from college who come in by themselves and they have no idea what they're doing. You know, you ask them, do you have any medical conditions that I need to know about in treating you?
Let me call my mom.
Yes, exactly. Let me text my mom. You know, are you allergic to any medications?
Let me call my mom.
Yes, exactly. So parents, I think that sometimes framing it like that to make sure that your child is equipped to seek healthcare when they do become an adult, because they will be an adult, it's important for them to be informed and empowered about their own health conditions. I mean, my son has a kidney situation that we follow, and he needs to know how to say that diagnosis, because I think Even now, yes, he still lives at home, but he plays sports. He could be injured on the sports field. He could be taken by ambulance to the hospital. See, this is all the paranoid thoughts of a mom, right? But I want him to be able to tell them, yes, this is what I have, so that they can look at that and know that. So I think that's important to think about. Are you equipping your child to take charge of their own health? Because eventually they are going to do that. And we want to make sure that they're well equipped to do that. I think the other thing to know is that most care providers, they have your family's best interest at heart. They are not trying to do intentionally tell your child something that is contrary to your beliefs. Although that can happen, and that's why it's important to have open conversation. So if I have parents, you know, who sometimes I will ask if the child wants to have some alone time with the provider, because parents, we have to understand, just like Amber said, sometimes it can be really embarrassing to disclose something to your parents, but you could ask a healthcare provider and then they can determine, like, yes, I can help you with this, or yes, this is something your parents need to know, or, you know, looking at this spot somewhere, like, I don't want my mom to be in there. And sometimes Stephanie, my producer, and I were talking about this, and her care provider will say, do you want your mom to leave or turn her head?
They'll say that,
but giving them some agency there. But I think too, just it's perfectly fine to ask the healthcare provider, I'd like to know everything that you're going to ask. What kinds of things are you going to cover? And then, you know, it's a great opportunity at that point, parents, to learn some things yourself. You know, you may be learning about some new health trends that maybe you didn't know about before that can spur an open conversation with your kids, which is really important. Well, Amber, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I did want to revisit what we talked about at the top of the segment, this Maya Kowalski case and abuse. And that does happen. I mean, that's the other side of this, is that as pediatric healthcare providers, you have to understand we are looking for those real cases. So in just a minute or so, do you want to share your experience in working with that specific population?
Sure. So we as nurses and nurse practitioners do have a mandate to report to CPS. I've only done that a handful of times when I was a practitioner, not a child abuse practitioner, but when I was working in primary care. And it was because I really felt like something was going on with that kid. I know sometimes that healthcare providers get it wrong, and that can be really scary for parents. I do absolutely understand that. I saw a lot of child abuse cases in my time there. I worked 2 years there, and I had 576 cases in 2 years, and that's just in one county. But I will tell you that when kids disclose, they do tell the truth. And so if a kid tells you something, it is like very likely that they are telling the truth. And so do know that if we do have to report, it is coming from a place where we have seen this happen before. And I would rather report and be wrong than not report and something be happening to that child. So it's a tough place to be in.
Well, this is a subject we are clearly not finished discussing. So stay tuned. We will be talking about this in future days to come and unwrapping this incredibly complex topic. But remember, I don't want you to be fear-based in your parenting. I want you to be faith-informed. So stay tuned. We'll talk about it more, and we'll see you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.